Welcome to Torat Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther, Perek Tet. In the 12th month, the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the month, when the king's command and decree were to be carried out, the day upon which the enemies of the Jews had waited expectantly to overcome them, all was overturned, and the Jews themselves overcame their enemies. Let's not miss the impact of this verse. We generally think of Purim as one day, and we read the Megillah as a series of events that seem to closely follow one another. In reality, 9 months had elapsed between the previous chapter and this one, and 11 months since the initial decree had been issued. Almost a full year in which, while the Jews were engaged in rejuvenating their observance of the mitzvot and revitalizing their relationship with Hashem, which had become routine and stale, they didn't yet know what the outcome of their efforts would be. The initial rejoicing precipitated by the letters sent by Mordechai and Esther would surely have given way to a sense of foreboding, knowing that the clock was ticking toward a confrontation with their enemies, whose permission to attack the Jews had not been revoked. Imagine the many shiurim and emuna and bitachon that must have proliferated throughout the empire as the days on the calendar passed one by one, each day bringing the threat of annihilation closer and closer. Just as the Jews must have marked the days on their calendars in a state of inner conflict, their feelings of fear and trepidation coupled with their renewed religious fervor, so too the enemies of the Jews marked their own calendars in expectation of the victory that must surely be theirs, given their superiority in numbers and in military expertise. For those who can recall the last days of May and the first week in June of 1967, when Arab mobilization on all fronts presaged the near certainty that Israel would be wiped off the map, the feelings must surely have been very similar. Similar, too, was the outcome. V'nahafochu asher yishletu ha'yehudim hema b'soneihem. All was overturned, and, contrary to all expectations, the Jews overcame their enemies. The Jews gathered in their cities throughout the kingdom of Ahasuerus to defend themselves against those who sought to harm them. But no one stood against them, for fear of them had befallen all of the nations. And all the officials of the provinces and governors and local rulers and servants of the king declared the superiority of the Jews, for the fear of Mordechai had fallen upon them. Malbim comments that these officials, unlike the common masses, were not awed by the Jews as a whole, but refrained from raising a hand against them only because they were afraid of consequences that might be enacted upon them by Mordechai, who had been elevated to the former position of Haman above all other officials of the empire. For Mordechai continued to rise in esteem in the king's house, and his reputation spread throughout the provinces, and Mordechai continued to rise in power. And the Jews struck at their enemies, killing and destroying and doing as they willed against their adversaries. And in the capital city of Shushan, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men, as well as the 10 sons of Haman, each mentioned by name in the Megillah. The 10 sons of Haman, aggressor of the Jews, were killed, and the Jews did not loot the spoils of the war. On that day, the number of those killed in Shushan came before the king. And the king said to Esther the queen, "The Jews have slain and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the capital, and the 10 sons of Haman. Now, whatever your petition, it shall be granted. Whatever your request further, it shall be done." Then said Esther, "If it please the king, let it be granted to the Jews that are in Shushan to do tomorrow also as this day, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows." Many contemporary sources detail the chilling relationship between these verses and the hangings of 10 condemned Nazi murderers following the Nuremberg trials of 1946. It is a matter of public record that as he was led to the gallows upon which he would be hanged, the Nazi criminal Julius Streicher, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be erased, turned and shouted, "Purimfest, 1946. Our sages and the Midrash comment on the word tomorrow in Esther's request. Yesh machar shehu achshav, v'yesh machar le'achar zman. There is a tomorrow that is now, and a tomorrow which is later. Thus, while on the surface Esther was speaking of the 14th of Adar in ancient Shushan, on a deeper level, she was prophesying the future. In the Megillah, the names of Haman's 10 sons are written very large and in two columns. This is in distinct contrast to the style of the rest of the Megillah. The left-hand column contains the word ve'et, and, 10 times. According to our sages, the word et always indicates something more than that which is explicit in the text. The inference here is that another 10 people were hanged in addition to Haman's 10 sons. If we examine the list of Haman's sons, three letters are written smaller. The Tav of Parshandata, the Shin of Parmashta, and the Zayin of Vaizata. Those three letters together form Taf Shin Zayin, the last three numbers of the Jewish year 5707, which corresponds to the secular year 1946, the year that the 10 Nazi criminals were executed. The Nuremberg trials were a military tribunal, and thus the method of execution was usually by firing squad. The court in this case, however, prescribed hanging. Esther's request, "Let Haman's 10 sons be hanged tomorrow," echoes through the ages. Some sources go further and describe the particular evil characterized by each of the 10 sons of Haman based on analysis of their names, and draw specific parallels to each of the condemned Nazis and the crimes he committed. Although it is beyond our scope to discuss each specific parallel, it is important to know that they exist. This helps us understand why the 10 sons of Haman are not only named, but highlighted in the text. No detail of the Purim story is excessive. Every thread is part of the tapestry, not only of the story itself, but of the scheme of Jewish history and continuity. Although we are in exile and God's presence is hidden, he is still there and can be found by those who seek him. As expressed colloquially, God is in the details. In verse 14, the king commanded that Esther's request be carried out, and the decree was issued in Shushan, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. And the Jews gathered in Shushan on the 14th day of Adar as well, and they killed in Shushan 300 men and did not loot the spoils. And the remainder of the Jews in the provinces of the king gathered to defend themselves and killed 75,000 of their enemies and did not loot the spoils. On the 13th day of the month of Adar, and they rested on the 14th and made it a day of feasting and celebration. While the Jews of Shushan gathered on the 13th and 14th of the month and rested on the 15th, making it a day of feasting and celebration. Therefore, the Jews who live in unwalled cities celebrate the 14th of Adar with feasting and joy and sending gifts to one another. The sending of gifts is a manifestation of the Achdut, the unity that now reigned among the Jewish people, in direct contrast to Haman's earlier accusation that the Jews were fragmented and therefore deserving of punishment. In verse 20, Mordechai recorded these events and sent messages to all the Jews throughout the empire of Ahasuerus, near and far, to charge them to keep the 14th and 15th of Adar each year, to commemorate the days upon which the Jews rested from fighting their enemies, and the month which had turned from agony to joy, from mourning to celebration, to keep them as days of festivity and joy, sending gifts to one another and presents to the poor. Thus, the Jews accepted as a mitzvah that which they had initiated to do and that which Mordechai had written. For Haman, the son of Hamedata the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews, had plotted to destroy the Jews and had thrown lots, hipil pur, hu hagoral, in a gamble to confound and destroy the Jewish people. But when Esther came before the king, he decreed that the evil that Haman had plotted against the Jewish people fall upon his own head, and he and his 10 sons were hanged. Therefore, these days are called Purim, on account of the poor, the lottery. In view of the letter and all that had occurred to them, the Jews committed and accepted upon themselves and their descendants to observe these 2 days in the prescribed manner each year. The Vilna Gaon comments that the reason the name of the holiday is derived from Haman's lottery is because this constitutes the essence of the hidden miracle of Purim. At a time when Hashem's presence is hidden, it seems as though the world is left to the conduct of mazal, to chance and randomness. Yet, Hashem intervened and overturned the mazal of the month of Adar. So that which seemed to epitomize the quality of randomness, in fact, became a symbol of divine presence and orchestration. These days are remembered and observed in every generation and in every family, in every country and in every city, and these days of Purim shall never perish from among their descendants. Esther Hamalka wrote a letter with full authority, together with Mordechai HaYehudi, that this second letter be confirmed. Based on a Talmudic teaching in Masechet Yuma 29a, the letter Tav in the word Vatichtov is enlarged to indicate that just as Tav is the last letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the story of Esther is the end of the miracles described in Tanakh. And the letters were sent to all the Jews of all 127 provinces of King Ahasuerus, words of peace and truth. These days of Purim shall be celebrated at their times, as established by Mordechai and Esther, and as the Jews accepted upon themselves and their descendants, days of fasting and entreaty. And Esther's word established these days of Purim, and so it was written. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilui Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.